This is MMA Torch editor Wade Keller with an introduction to this week's episode of the MMA Torch podcast. It's episode number 2 with host Sean Ennis, joined by MMA Torch columnist Jerry Catalane, as they discuss a week's worth of headlines and upcoming fights in the MMA world. I want to thank for a moment here everybody who has supported this podcast after just 1 week. We've moved up in the rankings in iTunes very nicely, and I want to encourage you to continue to spread the word about this podcast. Sean did a very nice job hosting last week, and he's going to have a rotation of guest analysts from the MMA Torch staff on a week-to-week basis, and so I hope you'll check back. I'm sure Mike Chersulik, who did a great job with the first episode as a co-host with Sean, will be back. And Jerry Catalane does a really good job here also with episode 2. So anyway, I don't want to ramble too much, but I do want to warn you that unlike last week, where I think the sound quality was very solid, this week we had some technical problems. We did some sound repair as best we're able to technologically with our limited skills, both mine and Sean's. It is a little shaky at the beginning, gets better as it goes on. We've evened out the sound level. Definitely listenable. Jerry sounds great. He does most of the talking, but when Sean talks, it's not at the level that we're going to expect, that we expect to achieve for future podcasts. So it's just one of those growing pains with Sean hosting it at his location and experimenting with different options in terms of how to record it. So hope you'll bear with us during these growing pains, and I do want to encourage you also to check out MMATorch.com. We've got new updates on that website almost every day, and some real good staff contributing a lot of real good articles that I think will help novice MMA fans learn a lot, because we are not a site that shies away from welcoming newer MMA fans. Even though I've been covering UFC dating back to UFC 1 and even predating UFC, covering Pancrase and UWF I and UWF from Japan, some of the precursors to UFC. I learned from the articles on MMA Torch. I have a lot to learn about MMA. I think we all do. It's a growing sport, fascinating sport, and really fun to talk about and listen to people who know what they're talking about talk about it. And so Sean and Jerry do that this week. So anyway, without further ado, let's go right to Sean and Jerry for this week's MMA Torch podcast, episode number 2 for May 11th, 2007.
Hello everyone, this is Sean and welcome to the second episode of the MMA Torchcast. Today is Friday, May 11th, and I am joined this week by Jerry Catalane. Jerry, how's things?
Things are good, Sean. Things are good. Like I said, beautiful day out here in lovely northern New York.
Excellent, excellent. I am out in the magical land of Indiana, where the land is flat. So I'm
able to look at Sweet.
Yeah. All right, well, let's look at some of the news items we got this week. Let's jump right in with UFC 22. Now, this was a card that was originally supposed to be free broadcast on Spike TV. Turns out that Spike does not want to pay to show the event. They don't want to pay what the UFC wants. And they have a UFC Fight Night showing earlier that week. Apparently, you know, the same thing happened with UFC 70.
Right.
Where they had two cards in 1 week, if I remember correctly. And apparently the rating did not show them quite enough that they were that they were willing to pay for two events in 1 week again.
Right.
So what's your take on this so far?
Well, you know, I can certainly understand where Spike's coming from on this. And, you know, I think any time the UFC runs into pushing too much of their product out at the same time, I think they're probably going to run into this issue. On the face of it, you know, 72 looks like a decent card. I think it's really being underrated by a lot of folks who are writing it off. I mean, you know, you have several real good fighters fighting, and you have really a couple of neat, intriguing matchups. So I think it'll be worth the cost to buy it, or certainly have some friends over to chip in. But, you know, you can certainly understand Spike's position. Saturday night's a tough draw anyway. And
yeah, I agree. I mentioned that on my blog a couple of days ago. You know, people were still down on the card when it was free. But, you know, I was talking about how it's a pretty good card for a free card. Now they go and they, you know, stupid charging for it. But, you know, I can also understand where Spike's coming from. I would just think that this is something that would have gotten worked out, you know,
before
they announced it's free, you know what I mean?
Right. Even so, Sean, I mean, when you get right down to it, you know, I mean, it amuses me to see a lot of folks really slack a card, especially when it's a free card. I mean, it's free. It's free.
Yeah.
It's no different than watching, you know, if you're a boxing fan, watching the Friday night fights on ESPN or something to that effect. I think it's pointless to slag a free card. So, but even so, now you're going to look at, you know, what, probably a $40 tag on this. you know, I think I pointed out in one of my columns a while ago, hey, you know, have four or five of your friends come over, kick in $5-$10 a pop, and watch the fights. I mean, if nothing else, great.
Now, the one thing they may look at, since they usually headline every card that they charge for with a title fight, and
right,
it doesn't have that, I wonder if they'll reducing the price. I think it might be a good idea to maybe take down 20 to 30 bucks.
I definitely agree with that. I think especially when you look at, you know, the next big card coming up is an absolutely loaded card with two title fights. I think just to pique the interest of a lot of people, and you know how UFC puts out their pay-per-views in terms of pimping the next event, you know, I would rather see this come out at like $20, if nothing else, to kind of, you know, psych people up for your next card.
Yeah, absolutely. Franco Nokami is a pretty intriguing fight, at least to me. And you've got, I don't see how you can miss with a fight like Tyson Griffin versus Clay Guida.
Oh, no.
Yeah, same fight.
Oh, I think, you know, I agree with you. I mean, the Griffin-Guida fight should be fantastic. And I thought Okami showed me a lot when he fought Swick, you know, going to the Swick's backyard and taking out Swick. And if you go down the card a little further, I really like the Scott Smith-Ed Herdman bout. I think that should be just
absolutely a
lot of fun.
Absolutely. I think especially after Smith kind of blew it against Patrick Cote, and that the other fight should have been a real a good fight, ended up kind of sucking.
Right. The other thing I think you got to wonder about is, you know, if I flip through the website here and, you know, right now they're saying only four fights are definitely on the card, and I think UFC is going to have to firm that up if they're going to throw out a $40 price tag. I think you got to show six or seven, or at least six or seven of these fights.
Absolutely. I think that's at this point it's probably the smart way to go, to say we're going to show this many fights, but maybe not say which ones they are, except for a couple. You know, because they showed up with UFC 70. They had Machida and who was Machida fighting the 70?
Heath.
Yeah. They had that on the main card, or scheduled it on the main card, and didn't show it, which, you know,
surprising.
Which was fine. It wasn't really something that was going to draw a lot of viewers. But at the same time, people may have gone and expected that,
right?
And then didn't get it. So I think they may be well off saying, okay, we're going to show Franklin Okami for sure. We're going to show Forrest Griffin for sure, and then the rest of them, we'll kind of see which ones are the best ones. We're going to give you the best fights.
Right. Well, that's great. I mean, if that's the way it goes down, but, I mean, I've been really disappointed with a lot of the UFC broadcasts in that, you know, you go 3 hours and you get four fights, five fights, and then you turn on another broadcast and, you know, I'll use Pride for an example, I guess, Pride 33, where you got the whole card, you know, in 3 hours.
Yeah.
And I could do without seeing all the advertising, and I could do without seeing all the pimping the next show during the pay-per-view. I mean, I've already bought the show. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. The thing that burns me, especially on the pay-per-views, is the extended commercials for upcoming and whatnot.
The worst. Sean, it's like going to the movies. It's like going to the movies. You go to the movies, and all of a sudden you're watching TV commercials for the first 20 minutes. Well, I could have stayed home and watched TV.
Well, it's like doing it in the middle of the movie.
Right. Exactly. I mean, that's a great analogy. I think there needs to be some sort of mindset change there, where, look, we've got these guys hooked in for $40 a crack. Let's throw our fights out there, and I don't need to see a movie trailer for 8 minutes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I mean
that's the point of people coming back.
Right. I'll say this about
and the philosophy. You've got a captive audience. They're not going anywhere. They paid $40 for the car. So of course, you know, if you throw in a commercial there, you can say to your advertisers, hey, people are going to see this. But at the same time, is it in your best interest to do that? I don't think it is.
Well, you know, I'm not saying you shouldn't advertise in the middle of your event. I mean, clearly that's unrealistic. But I think you don't want to blow off your viewer. You know, I mean, you don't want to turn off your viewer. Like I say, a free card, if you want to show two fights and the rest of it be advertising and upcoming events, that's fine. Like I say, if I'm throwing out $40 for a fight, you know, I want to see the fights. You know, I don't have to drop another $2.99 or $1.99 on UFC on demand to watch fights that I already paid for to see the card. You know what I mean? I mean, it just strikes me too much of money grabbing. I mean, I understand how to, you know, you got to market your you know, show your advertisers. That's great. But I tell you, and you know, I've been kind of reviewing Bodog here a bunch, and Bodog does a real good job of sliding two good fights in per hour, but yet maintaining their corporate presence. And I think you know, UFC could really take a snippet from them and incorporate it into their own broadcasts.
Yeah, I agree. As much as I bashed Bodog when it first came out, I think that's a promotion that has improved tremendously since their first season. I mean, their first season, I couldn't even watch it. It was awful. you know, with all the self-promotion of Calvin Ayer, that guy, I couldn't stand it. And then, you know, last season with that ridiculous intro.
Oh, dude, that was, I think I beat that to death. You know, but still, I mean, there were a lot of fights in season two that were good fights. I mean, if you look past the lousy production, you could see that there were some good fights.
Yeah, and you know, and they, especially with the Costa Rica season, I mean, it's their best yet. And they've touched on a lot of things that are having problems with. The announcers in season two were horrible.
Right.
And they've still got Paul Lazenby there, and that's fine. He's a pretty good color guy. But the lead announcer they had in season two was awful.
Yeah, well, you know. What? Absolutely. I mean, Lon McCaffrey, he's a poker guy. I mean, he's a poker guy, and he's like ESPN's throwaway guy. I mean, like, I work a lot of nights. Occasionally, when I, you know, flip back to the lounge and, you know, catch a little ESPN2 or Classic or what have you, it's Lon McEachern in some godforsaken place calling a, you know, women's kendo match in, like, 1996. I mean, that's Lon. And now he got hooked into poker where he's getting some notoriety. But still, from season two to season three, you know, improving the intro, the fights have gotten better. Splitting up the Vanilla Twins there, Jeff Osborne and Paul Lazenby has been tremendous because Lazenby's kind of come into his own as a color guy. And then throwing Hoyce Gracie in there every now and then. Oh, you can't beat it.
Yeah, it's been real nice. You know, especially, and you mentioned Lazenby and Osborne, those guys, when they were in the booth together, sounded exactly the same. I could never understand. I never knew who was talking.
Right. You couldn't. You know? I mean, that's why I called them the Vanilla Twins. I mean, they were identical as far as, you know, if you couldn't see them. It's nice they split them up. I mean, Jeff, I think, you know, he's the fight commissioner now for Bodog, doing a great job putting together fights. I don't think he needs to be on camera anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, hats off for making this promotion better to watch. But, you know.
Definitely more watchable now.
More Hoyce Gracie.
But, yeah, that's the point. Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
It always brings credibility to whatever he's going to do.
How do we get from USC to Bodog?
Yeah.
Yikes. That's scary. No, but sliding back to UFC 72, you know, I think Rich Franklin's going to have his hands full of Kami for sure, but we'll see what kind of, I mean, I think Rich has a lot to gain by having a big, big win.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a stoppage win over Kami would be huge, because Kami's the kind of guy, you know, he kind of works his game plan the whole fight, and then in the third round, he really kind of turns it on. You know, we've seen that with all his fights so far.
Yep.
He'll either stop him in the second or third round or go to a decision. Or, you know, he's the kind of guy also that, you know, he's not going to necessarily really push the action, but if he sees an opening, he'll take it. And, you know, he's a dangerous fighter. I think he's going to have his hands full.
Yeah, it makes you wonder where Okami goes if he wins. I mean, I would think that, you know, the general wisdom would be, you know, Franklin wins and he's in line for a shot. If Okami pulls off the win, and I don't think he's a long underdog to do it, you know, do you start looking at him for a matchup with Silva? Assuming that Silva gets through 73.
Yeah, I really think you've got to. Now, if you're asking me, at this point, you know, I kind of go back and forth. But right now, I think that Marco will probably take the belt at 73. Now, if Okami were to win, you know, I could definitely see him getting the first title shot. And then setting up a Franklin Silva rematch, because I think that was I'm pretty sure I heard Dana White say that rematch was going to happen regardless of whether Silva still had the belt.
That would be a fun rematch to see. It'd be better with the belt, of course. I think Silva takes him out again. I just think I think styles. You know, they say styles make fights. I think there's just some guys that have another guy's number, and it doesn't really matter how good or bad necessarily. Or how better or worse, I should say, you are than your opponent. If you have a style that exposes your opponent's weakness, you're going to win most of the time. I think Silva's that guy to Franklin.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, Silva, Now Franklin didn't look good at all in the first fight, obviously. I think he'd obviously put on a better show the second time, but he still was in his head. I mean, you could see it in his last fight against McDonald, just the relief that he had when he won the fight. You know,
yep.
But he kind of proved it to himself that he was still any good.
Yep.
You know?
Well, I mean, it's hard. I mean, you know, I mean, it's hard to go back. So, you know, you don't have to go back too far. Rich Franklin was the man. I mean, you got to remember, before Silva rolled around, Rich Franklin was the man in that division. And, you know, he had this almost, yeah, and to get just completely humiliated like that, I would, that's got to do some serious damage to your psyche.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. So, well, okay, let's...
roll on here. That's going to be a good card, though, and I think it's going to be worth what they put into it and what they charge for it, more or less, as long as it's not terribly extravagant.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, you can trash a card all you want, but you never know what's going to happen to see the fight.
That's the best part about MMA.
yeah, I mean, it's the same thing when you've got a card that's really hyped. UFC 73, that's got some great looking matchups on there.
Right.
But it could absolutely be a horrible card.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the best fight on the card might be the first one. You never know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's happened a couple of times with those undercard lightweight fights, like Griffin
yep.
and Edgar. My gosh.
Yep.
What a great fight that was, and it was on the undercard.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. I agree.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Let's do 72. Let's look at UFC 71 a little bit. That's coming up in a couple of weeks here. Right now, if you had the ticket, you got Liddell or Jackson?
I beg your pardon, didn't get you. Liddell or Jackson? Oh, I knew you were going to put me on the spot here. You know, it's been a weird year, and it's hard to pick against Chuck Liddell. It really is. But I think I'm going to lean towards Jackson on this one. And I think here's my reasoning, and again, it's newbie reasoning. He's beat him once. He has a good style. He has the style that can beat Chuck. You know, he's got acclimated back to the country. He had a little fight in UFC already, which, granted, he didn't look great, but he got the stoppage. And it's just been that kind of year. You know, it's just been that kind of year where guys have come out of nowhere to win big, and Jackson is by no means a nobody. And I think I like his chances.
Yeah, you know, I think he has a pretty good chance. I would probably pick Liddell at this point. But it's kind of a toss-up. I mean, I don't know. You know, it's hard to, like you said, it's hard to pick against Liddell because he always just seems to find a way. I mean, if you make one mistake, drop your hand an inch too low, you're done.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
But you know, Rampage matches really well with Chuck, so it'll be very interesting. I think.
Yeah, that'll be a real good fight to watch. There's no question about it. You know, it's funny because, you know, when we look at this fight, this is kind of in the line of, you know, Chuck is one of those few guys left that had that unbeatable label, if you will, kind of affixed to him, and he still has it, you know. And if you look out there, there's Chuck and there's Fedor, and that's about it, that are kind of like up on the pedestal. And I just wonder if it's Chuck's time to come off the pedestal a little bit.
You know, I think when it is Chuck's time, I mean, he relies on his reflexes and on his timing.
Yep.
That's the first thing to go, really.
Yep. Yeah, well, Chuck's no spring chicken. I mean, you know, I think it's going to be a... Go ahead. I think it'll be kind of a sharp decline when Chuck goes. You know, I think, because if you, especially his most recent fights, He pushes the action, but he does a lot of... He tends to counterpunch quite a bit, I notice. More so than he did in his earlier fights, where he would really push and throw.
I think it has a lot to do with who he's fighting, too.
That's true.
I mean, if you look at the Babalu fight, I don't think he expected Babalu to come at him like that. Not that it mattered. But, you know, he was punching off his back foot, but, you know, I don't think that was his plan going in. He was probably going to go and attack Babalu, you know, thinking he was going to sprawl and roll, but it ended
right.
up working out really well for him anyway.
Well, it's true it did. But I think Jackson's going to give him some fits. We'll see. I think it's going to be a great fight. I think that's worth the money right there.
Yeah, I think it goes into the third round, at least.
At least.
I think I see LaBelle coming out on top at this point. You know, I haven't written my preview yet, so I don't know for sure, but we'll see. Right.
Wait ahead, Shawty.
Okay, now also on that card, we've got a couple of fights that are really intriguing. You know, you've got Kyle Parisian, which Kyle always puts on a good show, and he's fighting Josh Berkman.
Yep.
I've got Parisian in that fight, but, you know, Berkman's tough. The Parisian, man.
Berkman is tough, yeah. I think you got to let Kyle, though, a little bit. I mean, Kyle was probably one of those guys that, you know, it's a tough division to be in nowadays, and Kyle's got to probably figure stringing a couple wins together is going to get him a shot. Otherwise, time flies, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Carl's just, he had a little bit of bad luck. You know, he was scheduled to get a title shot against Hughes back in 05, at the end of 05, when he was injured and Joe Riggs ended up taking a spot. And then since then, it's just been kind of, the timing's just been bad.
Well, and even so, I mean, here we are again, though. I mean, we're almost halfway 2007, and he's still a few guys down in the division.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think it lends a lot of credence to every fight is urgent, and especially for Carl, especially.
Look at how things would have turned out differently if he would have beaten Diego Sanchez.
Oh. Yeah, no doubt.
Carl's not going anywhere because you know he'll always put on a good show like that. As great as that fight was, how much better would it have been for him to win? I mean, my gosh.
It would have almost been night and day. I mean, again, he's still in the middle of the rank. You know, the win over Sanchez would have got him certainly to the mountain. I think most of these guys, yeah, it's good to hang around and get fights and get your checks and whatnot. But I would imagine if you're in the upper echelon of that division, you're thinking belt and you know promotions and you know ad deals and you know a little more jingle in the bank without actually having to get in the octagon. Carl's time is now. I think he needs a win and a big win, and because you got to figure he's got a lot to lose. If Berkman beats him at all, I would think Carl's got another 2 years of getting back into the swing of things.
Yeah, huge fight for Berkman at least. Now let's look at we got a couple more. I don't want to spend too much time on this. I want to move on to other things, but we've got Ivan Salvatore and Terry Martin.
Terry Martin,
huge fight. I tell you what, Martin is a strong dude.
Dude, you know, since Martin came down, boy, can he throw. It's hard to pick against Terry Martin until somebody gives him a hard time. I Salivary is a tough customer, but I just like Terry's hands. I think that's a knockout right there, I think.
205. He was heavy-handed at 205.
205, right.
Coming down the middle.
Oh.
I mean, he dismantled Jorge Rivera in a couple of seconds.
Yeah, that was bang, 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 and I mean, Rivera was out. I think Terry's got a pretty good future in the 185. Salivary is a very good fighter. I don't think there's any question about it. But I think this is Terry's time now. You know, Salivary's got a little height and reach on him. Perhaps you can keep him off. But I think he'll get inside and bang him a couple times.
Yeah, it should be interesting because Salivary, you know, kind of found his way out of the UFC after that loss to Nate Marquardt, which is kind of a snooze fest of a fight. But he's usually a pretty entertaining fighter, so it should be a really interesting fight to see.
Yep, I think there's a bunch of good fights on this card. I mean, Starnes and Levin should be a pretty good match. You know,
look at the prelims. You got James Irvin and Thiago Silva.
Yeah.
Silva's making his debut here, but this guy is a beast.
Yep.
He comes out of Shootbox.
Shootbox, yep.
Where Vanderlei Silva had a Shogun, all those guys train. And, I mean, I've seen a couple of his fights, and this guy's got some power. So it'll be interesting to see him go in there and bang with Irvin.
With Irvin. Yeah.
Irvin is obviously a puncher.
Oh, no doubt. I'd like to see Dean Thomas get back in the ring. That'll be fun to see, if you get to see it.
Yes.
And, you know, Keith Jardine's, you know, on the card, too, and he's another guy that's sneaking his way up the division. And, you know, it's funny, when people talk about the 205s, you don't hear a lot about, you know, Jardine. But, you know, he's well-rounded. He's got momentum. And I think, you know, he'll be a factor.
He can come out of nowhere like he did against Griffin. And I think still, you know, he's going to be one of those guys that just don't see coming. It's going to make some noise.
Yep, I agree. I think he's one of the hard to say new breed per se, but certainly new up and comers that you know, should Chuck get through Jackson, realistically should be on the horizon somewhere.
Yeah, it's Rashad Evans would probably be the next logical opponent if he gets past Ortiz, but
yep.
Jardine's not far behind.
No, I don't think Jardine's far behind. I'll tell you, Mike Bisping, you can say, you know, people can say what they want. I think he's two or three, you know, kind of ladder up fights away from being a serious contender. I mean, he's got all the tools.
It would be interesting what he does against some heavier competition.
Heavier competition, no doubt. I think he'll do all right. I mean, you know, he just has that look about him too. I mean, he just has that kind of that aura, if you will, that, you know, you can see he's going to do something. He's going to make an impact. Plus, he's good on the mic.
He's a remarkable guy.
Yeah, you know,
remarkable. He's got great charisma and everything.
I was just going to use that word. I mean, he's got it. I mean, very marketable, a lot of charisma, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
All right, so let's move on to Ultimate Fighter. We had the new episode last night, two fights, which was very nice.
Yep.
First fight.
After no fights last week.
What's that? Yeah, after no last let's see. So last night we had the first fight was Joe Lauzon against, I cannot remember the guy's name, Brian...
Garrity.
Right?
McGarrity, yep.
Garrity, yes.
Yep, Garrity.
And Lauzon showed that...
Woof.
Went against Pulver.
Woof.
Man.
Wow. If Joe Lauzon didn't rock it to the... Yeah, if he didn't rock it to the top of the favorite to win the event, I don't know who is. I will tell you, boy, did he look good.
Yeah, he looked as good as anyone else that's fought so far.
Oof.
Including Diaz, I think. Well, what a fight that would be. Him and Nate Diaz.
That'd be good to see. We'll see how it shakes out, but man, oh man, I was very impressed with Joe. I mean, it was funny how, because of the kind of hype the fights before, obviously, and he filled it out to the letter of the word. I mean, just came right out and imposed his will, as they say.
Yeah, he's for real, no doubt about that. Then the second fight, we've got Corey Hill and Emerson.
Rob Emerson, yeah.
That's me.
Yeah. Rob Emerson, yeah.
Robert Emerson, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I think there's some reason.
No
anyway.
Worries.
That fight was kind of disappointing to me. You know, although I don't know how disappointed you can be with it being Hill's first professional fight, even though it was kind of an exhibition.
Yeah, I really thought he lost. To be honest,
I did too.
I thought Emerson's leg kicks were really wobbling him. The only thing I thought Dana White hit it right on the head when he said Emerson was fighting not to lose, and I thought that. Somebody in his corner, and it sounded like BJ was screaming, you know, go at him, and he should have, because the leg kicks were hurting him, and I feel like you got to follow that up, because late in that fight, especially the sudden victory round, Corey was wobbled with those kicks.
Absolutely. And that's something, it always confuses me. I mean, guys that are successful with leg kicks, you know, your Keith Jardine, your Andre Arlovsky, when they use those leg kicks correctly, I mean, it kills a guy.
Oh, they're devastating.
Way off his game. When you've got no base, you've got nothing.
Right.
Well, it opens you up for everything. They start dropping their hands. They start looking for those leg kicks, and you can check it and then go right at the guy's chin.
Yeah. So, I was surprised. I was very surprised, especially with Emerson having a few fights in his bag, and that he didn't go after him. And the other thing I'm really surprised by is if you go back to the very first episode, BJ Penn, you know, calls out all the guys and says, who wants nothing to do with Jens Pulver? And, you know, three-quarters of them raise their hands. And I guess what I don't understand is, how come no one's listening to him in the octagon? You know?
That's my next point.
I mean...
for like an entire fight, and he throws like five, you know?
Yeah.
In all rounds.
Well, and you can go right back through the series, and every fight that they've lost is, you know, Penn's screaming, you know, more or less the way to victory, if you will. And these guys, I've never fought. I mean, I come from a very much an observer standpoint. I've never been in a ring or cage or octagon, so I don't really know what it's like per se. But it would seem to me that there's got to register in your brain somehow that maybe I should try this.
Yeah.
You know?
I can't remember his name. The one that Ruger knew that, you know, would never take the fly down in the ground. And Penn is, and he said, and he said to DJ,
2 weeks ago,
I'll take it down. I'm going to take it down. And then the whole fight, he's screaming at him to take the guy down, and he never does.
Right. And he eight shots and shots and shots, and you lose. And I don't know. I can only say so much from the outspect, looking in.
Yeah.
Ugh, makes no sense to me. It's kind of like not making sense to me. Like, how can you not make weight?
Yeah, exactly.
Just
let's look at the. And I think we'll hit on that in a second. I want to talk about Rudiger a little bit. But Corey Hill looks like he could be. I think he could be a little bit tough down the road, but it's so green right now. Really.
Very green. He's got that kind of Kendall Grove physique.
Yeah.
You know, kind of that. It's just. I would think it just gives an opponent fits. You know, I think if he gets trained up and actually, you know, learns the craft, if you will, I think he can be a good fighter.
I mean, at 6'4", at 155.
Yeah, he's a freak.
With the reach, even though he had really nothing for him. I mean, he just couldn't get past that reach advantage.
Right. But still, but even with that, though, Sean, again, he was getting in with his leg kicks, and he didn't follow it, and that's really what cost him the fight.
Yeah, I agree completely. Especially in that third round. If he had done nothing but throw leg kicks the third round, he'd won the fight.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Even with that, I still thought he won the fight. Everybody thought he won the fight. Except the judges. The judges didn't think he won the fight.
I had him winning.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you polled the MMA Torch columnists, I think we probably had it 6-0 for Emerson.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, so what about Gabe?
I had. What's that?
Well, I see. We posted his blog again today, and I haven't had a chance to read it. I know there was a nice little discussion about cutting weight and whatnot in Gabe's situation on the forum. Plug. But I just don't understand how you don't make weight. I don't get it.
I'm the same way. You know, I don't get it. You know, when you go into it that it's 155.
Everybody knew. For months, everybody knew it was 155. I mean, it wasn't like they showed up and it was a surprise.
Yeah, and Rudiger is a 155 pounder. I mean, that's where he fights.
Right.
And it's a shame, you know, it's half good, half bad, I think, for him. Well, actually, it might actually be all good for him because he'll be back in the UFC. I mean, people know who he is. He's got name recognition. So, you know, the weight thing aside, I think the way that he presented himself on the show actually worked a lot to his advantage, and he's a smart guy for doing that. At the same time, he would have demolished Corey Hill.
Oh.
He would have killed him.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. That's
you know,
but you'll never know now.
That's why those things happen. And Rudiger is a tough guy. I mean, if all you know from him is the Ultimate Fighter, you know, then you're missing out because he used to be WEC lightweight champion, was undefeated for a time, and lost to Hermes Franca. I think
right.
Either first or second loss.
Yeah, no shame there.
Came as the UFC. Yeah.
Steve, but the problem. Go ahead, Sean.
What's that?
Sorry, you're just breaking up a little bit. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. He lost to Hermes Franca in the WC, then came into the UFC and lost to Melvin Gallardo on that big nasty body punch a little while ago.
Yep.
But this is a guy, I mean, he's a legit fighter.
He's a legit fighter right now with a tarnished reputation because most people don't know that. Do you know what I mean? Most people, most casual fans, he's the guy that, he's the quote, fat end quote guy that couldn't make weight.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, thanks to the editing, was stuffing down ice cream cake for his fight. I mean, now we know that's not true. But still, he admitted that he usually walks around at 170, and they showed him come off a scale at 176. Well, if you got to drop 21 pounds or 22 pounds and, you know, you're only 170-something, that's a significant portion of your body weight. I mean, that's a lot. You might as well cut off an arm. You know,
absolutely.
So I think that Gabe's got kind of a twofold problem. I mean, if he still remains in the UFC somewhere to fight, he's gonna have to be awful impressive because for the foreseeable future, he's the guy that couldn't make weight.
Yeah, that's true. Now, if you look at it this way, I compare him kind of to a Sam Hogan from season one, where Hogan was kind of made out to the villain, you know, steal and stuff and all that kind of thing.
Right.
Now, had Hogan been successful, I think he's a marketable guy because people want to kind of see him get beat up. But when he gets beat up the first couple of times, it kind of takes the fun out of it. So.
Exactly. Yeah, I think
so
it's a little different.
It may be almost the same case for Rudiger. You know, I wonder if people are going to want to see him succeed or if they're going to want to see him get beat up. But either way, he's got name recognition.
Yeah, I think they're going to just want to see him. You know, because I think the casual fan does not understand that he is a good fighter. And I think you've got a lot of people that are veterans at this sort of thing saying, look, he's a good fighter. And the noobs are saying, well, we don't know that. And I think that, yes, he's got name recognition, but he's going to have to capitalize on it. He's going to have to win a couple fights big and kind of change his image.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's move on a little bit. We talked about Gallard with that knockout of Rudiger. Gallard, by the way, was just suspended for 8 months for testing positive for cocaine for his last fight, which was
amazing.
That was just mind-boggling. But you're a doctor. What can you tell me about the effects of cocaine on an athlete?
Well, I think it comes down to, you know, this kind of goes back to the Diaz marijuana thing. You know, I don't think any fighter in his right mind is going to go into the octagon or the ring intoxicated.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that's the issue. I think, you know, obviously if you're, you know, intoxicated on cocaine or marijuana or ecstasy or alcohol or what have you, your performance is going to suffer. I didn't really buy into the NSAC's decision on Diaz that the marijuana made him impervious to pain. I'm sorry, you know, I don't buy that for a minute. I'm not sure what else it was at work there, but I thought that was out of line. As far as Guillard goes, I don't know what these guys are thinking. You know, he came out and said that he tried it recreationally because he was with friends or some such. Why? I mean, you know, you're in probably the fastest growing sport, certainly fastest marketable sport in the United States today. You're one of the stars in this sport. What are you doing jeopardizing your career? You know, I mean, it should be fairly obvious that they're testing people, you know, for steroids and for, you know, illicit drug use. I mean, do you think you're going to get away with it? It's just mind-boggling to me. Stupid. Stupid.
Yeah. And he said, I think it came out that he had done it like a week before and thought it would be out of his system by then, but still.
Oh, no. Well,
like you said, why try it in the first place?
Right. It wouldn't. Like I say, he could try it a week ago, and is it going to impact this fight? No, it isn't. Truthfully, it isn't. But is it going to show up in your screen? Yes, it is. And that's the difference.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would say, you know, I would say that in terms of testing positive for this stuff, it's probably not impacting the fights definitively, except for the fighters getting suspended for months and months at a time, and, you know, you lose your place in line.
Yeah. That was kind of exploited. It kind of calls, it kind of brings up the point why the rationale behind the suspension. Did they suspend because, you know, simply because it was an illegal substance, because it's, you know, something that's against the law to do? Obviously, it's not performance enhancing at this point.
No, absolutely not. I can't see how it would be.
Yeah.
I mean,
but I don't know. I'm not sure what the rationale is. I'm not going to disagree with it necessarily because, you know, you take drugs, that's your own fault.
Right.
But at the same time, I'd like to see what the rationale is behind these suspensions.
I think it's more of I think it puts the sport in a bad light. I think that's a big part of it. And also, I think that when you get to the combat sports where the risk of serious or permanent injury exists, that if or when a fighter gets seriously or permanently injured, the last thing that any sanctioning body wants is to have that guy or girl for that matter, screen for a banned substance or an illegal substance, because I think it would increase their liability.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to, we've got kind of a big story going on, or potentially a big story, I should say. The CEO over at HBO was picked up on Saturday night after the Mayweather-De La Hoya fight, was actually arrested. and ended up summarily being asked to resign by Time Warner. Now, this is a guy, I can't remember what the guy's name is, Chris Albrecht. This was a guy, this was a guy that overrode HBO Sports when they were objecting to having the UFC on HBO. And it calls into question, or potentially anyway, calls into question whether that deal will actually get finalized. Now, we've heard from Dana White that it's essentially done, but, you know, you've got to take what Dana White says at face value, really. And not to badmouth Dana, but, you know, we've all heard him say things that are just not true.
Right.
He knows they're not true when he says them. So,
right. Misleading.
You know, you just kind of have to take what he says with a grain of salt. Is the deal done? I don't know. I kind of doubt that it is, or else we would have heard more about it by now.
Maybe not. I'm not sure that, I mean, I think you got to keep in mind that, you know, this is a pretty big dog in HBO, and, you know, at any given time, I'm sure there are multiple deals swirling. I'm not quite sure that this would be bang, bang, out goes MMA. However, I think it definitely puts the deal in jeopardy. You know, I mean, this goes into two lights. I mean, if you're Chris Albrecht, what are you thinking? I mean, you know, I can probably speak for most people who've been frustrated with their significant other. It's just, and when you're in the public eye, I mean, there are just some things you don't do. Secondarily,
I don't know if I mentioned that he was actually picked up. I know we talked about this before, but he was picked up in the parking lot for choking his girlfriend.
There you go. I mean, it's just one of those things. You just can't do that. Secondarily, as far as the MMA aspect of this goes, it would not surprise me to see some sort of restructuring of the deal if the deal goes through at all. I think HBO is probably looking at Showtime to see what kind of success they're going to have with Elite XC before they jump on board the MMA train, if you will, especially with their past history of boxing promotion. I think it's been funny to watch the boxing fans vigorously defend their sport over the last 3 or 4 weeks with a run up the Mayweather-De La Hoya fight, because I don't think I've seen a story on that fight that did not mention MMA somewhere in the discussion.
It's true. Really, you know, I think John Taylor mentioned this in his top 5 stories for the week. The whole argument of boxing versus MMA is kind of, it doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like football versus baseball, or football versus rugby. It would probably be more apt comparison. Like, you know, it's like a rugby guy saying, you're good at football, but you can come over and play rugby. Well, it's a different sport.
Right.
You know, it's the same idea.
Right. Yeah, it's not, and even when you get to the boxing versus MMA aspect of it, there are different people watching it. I mean, it's not even the same people watching. I don't think the same watching. I mean, like, you know, I mean, I buy most of the pay-per-views of in MMA. I can't remember the last time I watched a boxing pay-per-view. I mean, it's been decades.
I'm the same way. I've bought every UFC for the past couple of years. I've never seen a boxing pay-per-view.
Right.
Honestly, I used to have HBO, and I watched a couple of fights then, but...
I don't think I think I can speak for a lot of people. You know, boxing really hasn't been interesting since Mike Tyson was dominant.
Yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of that has to do with the separation of who's the champion. I mean, it's too hard to follow 4 or 5 different organizations and their champions, especially when a lot of their bouts are on pay-per-view, and boxing is not a gimme in terms of an entertaining card. I'm pretty confident that if I drop $30 or $40 for an MMA card, I'm going to see a couple good fights, one way or the other. Boxing, it's not a gimme.
Yeah, that's definitely true. That kind of brings me to another point. You were talking about the different champions. With MMA, it kind of makes you wonder if we're heading down that road or if we'll be able to avoid that. You know, you've got the UFC, which you could equate in boxing something like the WBC or the IBF or what have you. I don't know all the names of the sanctioning bodies, but you've already got multiple champions. Really, at this point, the only one of consequence, in offense to the other organizations, is the UFC heavyweight champion or the UFC light heavyweight champion, what have you. Really, I guess the pride champions as well. But you know, down the road, how do we avoid going into a point where it's like, well, who's the MMA heavyweight champion? Or who's the MMA welterweight champion? Like how boxing is. They've got 5-6 different champions and nobody knows who's who.
Right. I think, you know, and that's a good question. It's going to be I'm not sure who answers that question. I think that when you have, right now you have really one dominant organization, and that's the UFC Pride consortium, if you will. And everybody else is kind of hustling around. And I think, ultimately, it really depends on how some of these other promotions stack up in terms of viability. Ultimately, I think you're going to want to have one champion in each division that is universally recognized as the best guy.
Yeah.
How you go about that is difficult.
It's absolutely difficult. Yeah, so I think it's probably we could probably have a show just on that subject.
Oh, I'm sure you could. I mean, I'm not sure anybody really agrees who the number one guy is in any division right now. And certainly, you know, with the exception of, like I said, we go back to the who's got the unbeatable tag right now, there's two guys.
Yeah.
After that, it's very debatable. and then you have other promotions like, we'll use Bodog again, go back to beat that dead horse again. You know, I mean, once Bodog has enough stable of fighters, a big enough stable of fighters, I would imagine they'll start crowning champions also. And then that gets into a big mess. Is Fedor the Bodog heavyweight champion?
I mean, there's a couple of legit guys right now, even at the welterweight. You know, Eddie Alvarez is a tough guy.
Oh, Eddie Alvarez is very good. And
he's
then
very good. And, you know, he didn't compete by Nick Thompson, but Nick Thompson's good too.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, there are some real good fighters. You know, like I say, especially, like I say, the last season and a half, Bodog is showing their mettle and putting some good stuff out there. The other thing to remember is where Bodog's making inroads is they're signing most of the major women's fighters.
Yeah.
And, I've watched a fair amount of women's MMA and trying to set up the women's rankings for the column, and there are very few fights that suck. You know, it's kind of like watching lighter lightweights, and there is just no break in the action, and they just go. And I think that's a subset that the UFC is mistakenly skipping over.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any plans to change that. I'm pretty sure I've heard Dana White say that he has no interest in really showing women's MMA,
which I find odd. I find it odd in that. I don't know why you wouldn't want to corner the market in everything.
Yeah.
In every division. And I just find that surprising.
Yeah. You know, apparently, maybe he just doesn't think the market's big enough for it. Which, you know, he may be right at this point. No.
At this point, he might be, but, and he might be. But I think MMA as a sport is going to grow. It's going to grow, obviously. I don't think there's any doubt that the sport is growing. And if you're a consumer and you're laying out your money to go attend an event live or watch it on pay-per-view, the bottom line is you want to see good fights.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the bottom line. And I think it's been shown in MMA over again that I would almost make the argument that lighter fighters put on better fights than heavier fighters. It just seems that way.
And honestly, that's why I'm really looking forward to the WBC debut on Versus.
Yep.
They've got some tough guys there. Like Uriah Faber, he's a beast.
Oh.
But they just have the 145 division.
Yep.
I think it'll be a promotion to watch is the WBC. In my opinion, they should use it as kind of a feeder league, as kind of a minor league to the UFC, but, you know, that's just me. They say they're not doing that, but I think at the same time, if they've got a guy that's tearing it up down there, and they're not going to hesitate to bring him up in the UFC to challenge people, but.
That would be the logical thing to do. Also, it gives you a chance to develop a cast of characters. And I think that right now, I think we talked about, you know, like kind of the market getting saturated a little bit. I think the important thing is that you begin to get name recognition with more fighters. And, you know, no matter really what organization they're in, but you have to kind of develop a relationship with the fighter and the public that they recognize this guy so they'll buy your cards. Right now, if you have a card of 9 fights, there's 18 fighters, you know, the casual fans probably heard of 6, 4 or 5. how many are really going to look into who the other 10 are?
Exactly. And to kind of play off what you were saying, building a name in the WEC, I think that's a really good strategy because you've got guys, if you bring them into the UFC, which is going to be a bigger stage, and, you know, half of the audience really knows who these people are and is behind them, the rest of the audience is going to say, these guys came to the WEC, what am I missing? I'm missing out on the show.
Exactly. Plus, it's free. It's on Versus.
Exactly.
You know, I mean...
can't miss.
Yeah, I mean... The more quote-unquote free exposure you get, I think the better off you are, especially in developing characters and fighters. That's why, you know, I become a Bulldog fan more because even if I miss a fight on TV, I can watch it online. And that's huge.
Yeah.
Because you never really miss it. I mean, even if you know how to program your DVR, you know, you can still catch the fights.
Yeah. That's true. And one guy we didn't mention, Jake Shields, that they had there.
Yep, they had Jake Shields.
You know, Jake Shields is a real tough fighter.
Yeah, I think he's on the verge of cracking our top 10, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I believe that's true. And hopefully so. He's a tough guy. Also, with CTV, to move on a little bit, I know that there was something in the works with Pride. In the U.S., I know they were looking at getting them a TV deal, which would just be huge. I mean, they've got Fox Sports Net. But, I mean, to me, and maybe this is just me, I don't think Fox Sports Net is a great place to be because they don't have, you know, a solid schedule.
Right.
I think IFL might be on at a regular time. But other than that, I mean, it's a regional kind of thing. You don't know when anything is going to be on. You know, me with DirecTV, I don't even have Fox Sports Net because I have to...
You got to buy it. Yep. Same thing.
But if you get on a network, you know, if you get on a network that everybody has, or at least a network that you don't have to subscribe to separately, I think that does them a lot of good. They can get in a regular time slot, somewhere where they can develop their fighters, or at least you know develop the name recognition for them.
Exactly, a regularity, if you will. You know, Fox Sports Net is probably not where you want to be right now. Again, for the same reasons you mentioned. I mean, I don't want to have to subscribe to more channels to catch one show.
Yeah. I think it's okay for the ISL right now because they've kind of developed their niche right there. And they've also got the My Network TV thing, which Mike
right.
talked about a little bit less. But, you know, for Pride, I think they kind of need to get away from Fox Sports a little bit. And they probably will. I mean, I can't imagine Ziffa would let them stay on the same network with a competing MMA organization.
I don't
think that would happen.
Yeah, I couldn't either. I mean, I kind of saw the UFC Pride thing going along the lines of, I'll throw another wrestling reference here, you know, the Raw SmackDown ECW
yeah.
way. I kind of figured you'd see, you know, the UFC show, a Pride show, and then a WEC show kind of scattered among the networks all on different days.
I think that's the way to do it, honestly.
It would seem.
Your separate thing for a little while. You keep WEC free. You don't need to alternate your pay-per-views.
Yep.
And then come together for a couple of cards a year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. I mean, it's well rumored that Dana White, I wouldn't say admires, but certainly considers the practices of pro wrestling. It'd be interesting. The next 6 months, I think, it'll be interesting to see what happens because I think we touched on earlier in the podcast here. It's been surprising to me how under the radar what Zuffa's plans for Pride are.
Yeah, it is. It is surprising. You know, we were talking about it before. You've got the either the lightweight or welterweight Grand Prix coming up. We're not sure which at this point, but no one's heard anything about it other than it was postponed. I think it was tentatively scheduled to come back in July. Still, we haven't heard anything about it. It's May.
Yeah, it's like I say. I mean, not even just the events, but like. Who signed, who's still under contract, who the fighters are, are we going to see any of them in upcoming events? I mean, just almost anything. I mean, there was a good probably two to three week run-up to where it was rumored Zuffa was buying Pride, and then all of a sudden the news hit. They went over there, had a press conference, and it has been, you know, essentially dead air since. I would think at some point we're going to get some news about what's going to go on with Pride.
Yeah, I'm sure that's intentional, and they're probably just going to kind of announce everything at once, which is probably the way to go. At the same time, it's surprising that nothing's leaked, at least.
Yeah, and you know, I go back to that word momentum again, Sean. It seems like, you know, it's almost lost momentum. I mean,
yeah.
You know, in terms of Pride fighters, I mean, you got to be, again, you got to be someone that follows MMA pretty good right now to think about Pride fighters and when are you going to see them next?
Yeah.
If at all.
And, you know, I think that's something they can build back up pretty quickly. But at this point, right, they had the momentum is pretty much zero.
Right.
Right now.
Well, I mean, they're gonna have to, but I mean, I guess my point is, why make more work for yourself than having to build it back up?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's there, and I mean, you have a ravenous, almost maniacal base of fans in this country that just, you know, love Pride. I mean, certainly you want to cater to them.
We're looking at, yeah, the couple of things they may be looking at is completely repackaging the product in the U.S. You know, if you're asking me, I don't think they're really worried about that hardcore base because they're coming back no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what they may say, the hardcore is always talking about boycotting events and what have you, but they always come back. You know, but I think they've got those guys, but they're going to be looking for the casual fans.
Right.
You know, like we talked about, that's people that you want to get because that's where you make your money.
We'll see what happens. I think it's going to be. I think the back half of 2007 is going to be a fascinating time to be an MMA fan. Between the cards coming up, between the potential title changes, between the theoretical new competitors you're going to see in the major organizations, I think that the landscape is going to change pretty aggressively. Still.
Yeah. I agree. Tell on a couple of more things before we cut out for this week.
Sure.
Just real quick, we've got Kermit Cintron, who is one of the world's heavyweight champions in boxing.
Yep.
I don't know which one, maybe IBF, something like that. Anyway, he's looking to take the challenge that Dana White extended to Floyd Mayweather to come and fight Sean Sherk in the UFC. I have my own take on this. What's yours?
You know, part of, you know, Cintron's got a fight coming up, I think, in July. Obviously he's trying to get his name out there and pimp it a little bit, and, you know, good on him and trying to get a little PR. I don't doubt that he would probably take the challenge. From what I understand, he's got some wrestling background, and obviously he's a big puncher in his own division. I think he's got like 24 KOs or some such.
Yeah.
My take is, and I hate to say this, but my take is this is kind of lose-lose for MMA, I think. I look at it as, let's say Cintron gets trained up a little bit for, you know, the MMA game for a month or two or so to come in and fight Sherk. And let's say Cintron wins, okay, hypothetically, catches him with a punch or what have you. Let's say Cintron wins. I think it kind of derails the popularity of, not necessarily the popularity of MMA, but the credence of MMA a little bit. Because Cintron is not a, you know, I think he's like the number seven guy in one of the, you know, like I say, one of the ranking systems, and so he's not like a top three guy or a champion type guy. Sean Sherk is the champion in the division of the number one organization in the United States. If Cintron comes in and wins, I think it really puts a mark on UFC. Even if Sherk wins, I think he's got to do it in dominating fashion. And even then, I think you're gonna have a lot of UFC fans, MMA fans saying, "Well, who is Kermit Cintron?" And is this really relevant? So
exactly,
I think the up point of it is if Sherk wins, even if he wins, and especially if he wins convincingly, I think it's more major exposure by default for the UFC, and I think that's probably worth the risk to White.
Yeah, I think honestly, I don't think he would extend the challenge to anyone other than Mayweather because, you know, in Mayweather, you've got a name in boxing, a real name, a real draw, and you know, I mean, you know, really, that Sherk would win that fight.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
He can train takedown defense for a couple of months, but Sherk is going to take you down.
Right.
You know, he's just going, especially a guy that size.
Right.
And you know, there's very little doubt that Sherk would win that fight. And even if he did lose the fight, it's the Floyd Mayweather, arguably the best pound-for-pound boxer in the world.
Right.
Kermit Cintron, you know, Stacy comes in there and beats Shirk, like you said, that really does something to the credibility. Now, I can see Sintron coming into the UFC, but there's no way I see him coming into the title shot right away.
But this would be I'm wondering if they'd do something like a non-title bout. You know, pull a rabbit out of Pride's hat and throw him in a non-title matchup. I'm trying to figure out the most hospitable way to say this, but I just think that when you look at MMA fans and boxing fans, they are two separate populations, and I don't think you're going to draw one over to the other with an intersport matchup like this, or you're not going to draw many, I don't think. I think both are pretty entrenched in their means, and, you know, like I said, I mean, I have a lot of friends who are MMA fans. I don't know any of them that bought the De La Hoya Mayweather pay-per-view. But I know all of them are planning either watching or buying, you know, UFC 71. So I'm not sure how much relevance I would put in on this anyway. You know, and even when you look at, you know, Floyd Mayweather being a name, Floyd Mayweather made a lot of money on that fight because, A, he's an outstanding fighter, but he was fighting Oscar De La Hoya, who is probably the last big name in boxing right now. You know, and I think that's where Mayweather, in fact, you know, I believe De La Hoya made more than twice what Mayweather made on the fight, and he lost. some ridiculous number. But the point is, Floyd Mayweather, even, you know, and he is a great fighter, has limited recognition, you know, as opposed to an Oscar De La Hoya, who, again, is probably the last big name of boxing right now.
Yeah. So the Sintron thing, I just don't see it happening at all. I mean,
I don't either. Too much to lose, I think. I think you have too much to lose.
Exactly. And not enough reward. Reward is just not there.
Right.
I don't see it happening at all. I mean, it's fine that he wants this challenge. If he wants to come to MMA, I'm sure he'll be welcome. You know, you've got a guy like Alessio Zaccaro, who was a professional boxer.
Yep.
I believe he was like, you know, I mean, obviously not a champion or anything, but, you know, you can certainly go from boxing to MMA. The right kind of training. But, yeah, I just don't see it happening.
No,
and one other thing.
Be surprised.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about the Matt Pelkey's column with Super Bowl of MMA. give me a couple of your dream fights for that.
Well, let me tell you. I don't have Matt's column in front of me, but I kind of recall it. I think you got to put Fedor in there somewhere, and I think that's got to be the one. I think I touched on this in a column a couple weeks ago, and I think the time has come for Fedor to kind of develop to defend the Fedor is God zealots out there. Can't take anything away from this guy. Clearly a great fighter, probably still the very best there is right now, but it's been nearly 2 years since he's had a legitimate contender to fight against. And I think that you got to put him in there against somebody of the, you know, someone in the top five. I'm not sure I'd want to see him go with Mirko again. I like the idea of him fighting Couture if Couture was maybe 8 years younger. I just think I'm not sure it's a great matchup for Randy. I'd almost want to see Fedor in there, and I hate to say it, but I'm going to say it. I'd almost just want to see Fedor in there against Timah Sylvia. I really would. I'm intrigued to see that fight. I think, especially since, you know, I think that most of us fans are kind of, you know, thrown Sylvia under the bus, justifiably so, for his blanket-like style. But there was a time where he was a banger. And he certainly has all the tools to give someone like Fedor fits. He's big. He's got reach. He's got, you know, he's got good hands. He does know how to throw leg kicks, even though he didn't do it last fight. I'd like to see it. I'm not sure Timmy would win, but I'd like to see it. Plus, he's a top 10 heavyweight.
I'd like to see Fedor in there with Josh Barnett. I know it's not a Pride versus UFC kind of fight, but I think that would be a good fight.
I think that would be a good fight, too. I think, if I'm not mistaken, hasn't he beat Barnett already?
No.
I can't. I'm going through his wins. I can't remember. That would be a good fight.
But Barnett was pretty much the last guy in Pride that he hadn't fought.
Right. I would throw in Another one, I'd like to see Dan Henderson and Chuck Liddell. I know everybody's kind of Matt hyped up the Wanderlei Chuck fight. I'd like to see Chuck and Dan go at it. I think that would be a fun fight to watch.
Yeah, I agree. I'd like to see that one, but I'd also like to see the Liddell and Shogun.
That would be good too. That would be good too. I think, Shogun, that what a feather in the cap that would be for if you could pull off a win like that. He's beaten a bunch of people. I think Chuck's the last name out there for him to really go over.
Yeah. I mean you've got Shogun and maybe so could you on his next couple of fights. Forget standing at the door to be the next great light heavyweight.
Boy, you would think. So could you. He's the real deal, man. I think everybody's waiting for him to lose his next fight after the fluke win over Little Nog there. But man, I mean, he beat Arona. I mean, he just beat him.
Yeah.
Shrugged off a takedown and decked him, and he's for real.
You know what I would like to see is a fight between Pokaju and if Evans takes out Ortiz, Evans.
Yeah, that'd be a good fight too. That would be a good fight too. You know, it's funny that there's a ton of great fights out there. There really are. I mean, this could be a topic of a show by itself. Also. I guess on that vein, you know, who do you have next for Krokop? I figure if you're looking at the end of the year for a Super Bowl card, Krokop's 6 months for a knockout. You're looking at October, November.
You know, I think a guy that they could throw in there with Krokop is Arlovski.
Arlovski.
I really think that would be a crowd pleaser of a fight.
That would be a great fight. That would be it'd be nice to see Arlovski get some of the terror back. You know, there was a time, I remember when I just started watching UFC, you know, Arlovski was the beast.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see that guy fight again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Arlovski is still, he's still a young guy, and I think he got a lot of his mojo back against Verdun, but you want to see that killer come back, you know?
Yeah, he got some of it back. You could see it kind of flickering there. You could see it kind of flickering there. I think you know, a matchup with Krokop would do him a lot of good because, you know, Krokop on his game is an aggressive, coming-at-you guy. And Arlovski, this incarnation of Arlovski is kind of is more patient, let's put it that way.
Yeah, he definitely was looking to counterpunch against Verdun.
Yep.
But at the same time, I mean, he could push the pace too.
True.
You know, against guys like Guentello and Eilert, which admittedly aren't the top, the top tier of the division, he took it right to him and knocked them both out.
Right,
know?
A few fights ago. Like I say, I mean,
yeah.
That guy.
For the field, it's a debacle.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, you know, Arlovski's got to find that, he's got to pull the trigger and he fights like he looks like he's afraid of getting caught again, still.
Yeah.
Even against Verdun, I thought he was just a little too tentative. Just a little too tentative.
I mean,
he's getting it back.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, Verdun was coming in there with some strikes. You know, he was throwing the flurries, but nothing was really. It was all pretty sloppy, really.
Very sloppy. You
know, he was coming in with strikes, but nothing that Arlovski couldn't have avoided and countered. You know,
right.
Instead of countering, he just backed up.
Yep, but you know there were a couple times where you know Rudum waited in and Arlovski answered him a couple, and then he'd back out again. I think you know he and he did. He cracked Rudum once, and I thought he was going to pounce on him, and he didn't pounce. He was pounceless.
Yeah, that's the other thing he was missing is the pounce. You know, when he smelled blood before it was over.
Yep,
he hasn't been doing that.
Yeah, I think Krokop's just the medicine he needs because I think either he refines that niche of aggression that he has misplaced, you know, or he's going to carry it out.
And Krokop can be knocked out.
Oh, there's no question about it. I that's true, but he can also, he'll knock you out. I think it'd be a great fight to watch because there's so much intrigue behind it. You'd have the Krokop coming back from the devastating knockout story. You'd have Arlovski on the trail back to the title story. You know, Krokop was brought in to win the championship from Sylvia, remember?
Yeah.
And entice Fedor into coming into the UFC. That was the plan.
Yep.
Now Randy Couture is the champion, and you got some guy named Gabriel Gonzaga who's going to fight him in a couple months. Fascinating sport.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens in that fight. I never pick against Couture, but it's tough to pick against Gonzaga right now.
I think Gabriel Gonzaga is going to be your next UFC heavyweight champion. No offense meant to Randy Couture, but you could see that Randy really wanted to fight Krokop because it just fit his game better.
Right.
You know, and then
there's no bones about it. He said he would rather fight Krokop
right.
than Gonzaga.
Right, and I think Randy was very gracious in the ring or the octagon after Gonzaga won, but you could just see that he's thinking, you know, oh bleep, I am really going to have to train for this. And I like Gonzaga's chances. I mean, you know, he's going to come in as a dog. I think right there when you get into the playing with money column by Randy Rawls, you know, it's going to be hard not to take a little jingle on Gabriel Gonzaga because I think. He's a big dude, and he's got. And you know, it's funny. I think Jarsalik took me to task on, Gonzaga having good striking ability. And I went back and watched some of the fights he mentioned, and in fact, Gonzaga can throw.
Yeah. I was mentioning that in my preview. Or no, it was not my preview. My coverage of UFC 70 was, his fight against Kevin Jordan. And I think Mike and I were talking about this last
yep.
week. Just the ending of that fight was insane. You know, the Superman punch. Which is
yep.
probably the only punch thrown in the fight because that fight was awful, but still.
Yeah, but it's there. It's there. And I mean, the head kick that he knocked out Krokop with, you know, if you watch the replays, and I'm sure we all have thousands of times, Krokop was lifting his
yeah.
leg and guarding his chest, and he had two out of three. And he just, you know, you got some guy at 6'4", and I think he's, what, 240, 250, who can throw head kicks, you know, and fight on the ground. I mean, he marked Mirko up bad on the ground
yeah.
with the elbows, which I think is a whole new
yeah.
dimension for the Pride fighters.
Well, definitely. But, I mean, you know, Gonzaga is a scary guy. He's definitely a scary guy for anybody in the heavyweights.
Oh,
so
your next champion, man. I'm going on record saying it. I'll pick him.
Yeah. All right, well, there you have it. You heard it here first. Maybe not first, but you heard it here, so... Well, I think we're getting closer. We're probably over an hour at this point. But let's go ahead and wrap it up for this week. What do you got for parting shots? Anything?
Oh, just a little this and that. Obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, please come join us on the forum. We've got a lot of real, real knowledgeable guys on the forum who know quite a bit about the ins and outs of MMA. I'm not one of them. I freely admit that. I'm just a regular Joe like most folks that have kind of jumped on the bandwagon and really enjoy watching the sport develop. So come on, join us in our zones, and Shawnee, I've had a great time doing this. Hope to do it again with you soon.
Great. Yeah, Jerry Kellen, for Jerry, I am Sean Ennis. Thanks for listening, and if you want to send some questions that we're going to answer on the podcast, send them to EnnisTorch, that's EnnisTorch, at sbcglobal.net, or you can get in my zone on the forums and post some questions, and we'll answer them on the podcast. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.